Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. This week, join me in listening to an episode with Charlie Atkins, aka Smell You Never, on social media. Charlie is from Hertfordshire in the United Kingdom. She has a degree in genetics, and she works in the financial planning field. Charlie and I talk about her experiences growing up with congenital anosmia, why she decided to start her social media pages, the importance of networking with others who have anosmia, her work as a Fifth Sense ambassador, and much more. Our interview was recorded in June 2021. Let's listen to the interview. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, Katie. Yeah, I'm doing amazing. Thank you. It's really hot where I am at the moment. So,
Ooh, that sounds nice. Where I'm at today, it's kind of dreary weather and looks like it's going to be cloudy all day. So it's a little bit of a bummer. So to start off, can you share a little bit with us about yourself? What do you do for work? Are you a student? Just let us know a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I'm 25, so I'm not a student anymore. I have a degree in genetics, but I actually am currently studying to studying financial advice exams. So I'm a junior paraplanner, which basically just means I kind of help people, help advisors gather information and come up with a financial advice for people.
Fascinating. Okay, the fact that you have a degree in genetics is very interesting to me. We're going to come back to that, I think, in a little while.
it's a little bit random compared to my job, but it does help quite a lot with some of the scientific side of this no sense of smell.
So before we launch into your anosmia story, like, where are you from and where are you currently living?
So I'm from Hertfordshire in the UK, so it's just north of London. I was born here and I live here currently. I went to uni in Wales, so in Aberystwyth in Wales, but I'm pretty much always just in the same place.
Well, that's exciting. I would love to come back to the UK and go to Wales. I've not been there before.
Oh, so Wales is lovely.
Is it? It sounds like it is. I read a story as a kid, like as a teenager, like The Harp and the Key or something like that. It's like a book based in Wales. And since then I've like, it just sounds so idyllic that I want to come and visit.
Yeah. You just have to like sheep.
Like, yeah. Okay. Everywhere. Good to know. Good to know. So you're here today, obviously, to talk a little bit about your smell disorder story. So can you share with all of us, what is your own smell disorder story?
So I am a congenital anosmic. So I've never had a sense of smell as far as I'm aware. I mean, I've never been officially diagnosed and no one's ever done any kind of tests to see if it's actually congenital or why I'm congenitally anosmic. But I've tried. I've been through some tests, but that was before I found kind of other anosmics and kind of have a better idea of how I should approach things. So I'm going to try again. But yeah, I think I've had anosmia my whole life. I can never remember smelling anything. And it's been a bit of a long road. And because I have no idea what smell is, most of the time I just forget it exists. And the rest of the time I'm just very, very confused.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So was there a moment as a child that you can recall where you kind of it solidified for you that you figured out that you couldn't smell? And if so, what was that like for you?
I'd never really had like a moment where I realized, because well, for most of my childhood I assumed that I was doing something wrong, so I would just kind of play along and like wait, if someone said something smelled, I just kind of agreed with people. I thought it was something you could learn to do. I thought it was something that, you know, or you grew into, and it's just that I was a child and, you know, I just didn't know, and I was like, I was just bad at it. Like, it was a skill that I hadn't learned yet. So I just kind of hid it from people, or I'd say, oh, I have a cold. So if you ask my some of my friends from primary school, they'll always say, oh, you just had a cold all the time, which is not the case. And then around primary school, I think I must have been like seven or something, my family went to the zoo, and that's kind of when I was outed, if you will. We went to a rat enclosure, and everyone was just walking through, and I assumed it's because they didn't like rats. They're kind of not the most amazing animal. Like, a lot of people don't like them, so I assumed it was that, and I didn't care about rats, so I was quite happy watching them running around sniffing things. And I was in there for quite some time, and when I came out, all my family were standing there waiting for me, and I was like, hi, what are you doing out here? And they were, and they were looking at me in horror, because apparently it really stunk in there and no one could stand to be in there very long. Like, it's not that they didn't like the animals, it's just this, it was really smelly and they just couldn't be in there. And at that point they were like, I don't think you can't have a sense of smell if you're happy being in there, because I was just completely oblivious. After that, my mom and dad just started noticing more and more that I wouldn't notice when food was coming and things like that. So it was kind of like a gradual, oh yeah, you definitely can't smell, but I don't know, we never really did anything about it.
That's interesting. That's pretty interesting to me that you were in this rat enclosure, you were hanging out, and your family was like, what in the heck are you doing in there? It stinks. So
yeah.
7 is pretty young, though. Like, when they were trying to explain it to you or pointing out to you that how could you possibly be in there, was that confusing to you? Like, because the concept of smell didn't ever exist to you. So I'm just wondering, like, as a 7-year-old, do you remember being confused by them or, like, thinking they were tricking you or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, it's never really been explained to me what smell is. Mm-hmm. So I've never, like, no one's ever explained to me what they experience instead. Like, or not, they have started to since I've kind of been involved in the community. Mm-hmm. But until then, no one's ever explained to me what smell is, how it works. So everything I know about it, I just kind of worked out through like trial and error. So I don't know. They just said it smells bad. And I was like, okay, so there's something there that I don't know about that's bad. Okay. And then it just kind of built from there. They never kind of explained what smell was or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, smell's so subjective to explain. The only reason, honestly, that I understand it is because I was born with a sense of smell.
Yeah, and I get that, and you get that it's really difficult to explain to people what it is, and I never asked about it, so it's kind of like, you know, there's very little anyone can do if they don't know to explain, you know. And I spend quite a lot of time talking to people and parents who come to me and ask me, oh, like, my son, my daughter, my child, can't smell, what do I do, how do I make it better? And I always say, like, the very fact that you're here and you're asking this question means that you're doing everything right, you know. The fact that you want to help and that you want to explain means you've probably already explained more than people have to me, so just keep doing what you're doing, you know.
I'm wondering, are you familiar with A World Without Smells by Lars Lundkvist?
I haven't got to it yet, but I really need to read it. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I feel like you would really enjoy that book. I've spoken with Lars previously for the podcast and read his book, and he explains it from his perspective as the congenital anosmic. So it was really eye-opening for me. So I think that you would really enjoy that book.
Yeah. I mean, I always say that having congenital anosmia is a lot like taking a physics test, having never read or a physics book or had any physics lessons.
Right.
So
you go guessing.
Yeah, so every time you just walk into the exam and you just guess based on what you know. So, like, you saw an apple fall off the table, so you guess the exam based on that. And then all you know is that you've got the answer right or wrong. You don't know what the correct answer was, you just know that you got it right or wrong, and then you have to do it again and again and again. And eventually you kind of get to the point where you can just about pass it. And that's kind of where I'm at. But I still don't really know anything about it. And it's not that I know the answer, it's just that I know what was right before, sort of thing.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So kind of back to the beginning when you gave us your introduction, you mentioned that you have a degree in genetics. I'm curious, just from my own personal curiosity, I guess, Does that have anything to do with being born without a sense of smell? Is that why you pursued that degree?
No, it never really occurred to me, to be quite honest, because for me, the sense of smell, not having a sense of smell, was the same as like having brown hair. It was just something that I had, you know. It wasn't unique, although no one else had ever, I'd never met anyone else who couldn't smell, and no one else had it. Everyone I met had never met anyone who could smell. Who couldn't smell. Yeah, so although I seem to be the only one in my experience, it never felt like something that I needed to look into or could look into. It was just like a thing that existed about me. I chose genetics just because I was good at it. I was good at biology at school, and I enjoyed that section of the module, of the GCSE and A level. I enjoyed the genetics part. That's why I chose genetics. It was nothing to do with smell, although now, having been involved in kind of the anosmic community and seeing all of the research that needs to be done, I'm almost like, oh, I should still be doing genetics and I could be doing all of this research.
Yeah, I wonder if it was like subconscious. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to me that as someone with a congenital condition, which is probably genetic, you ended up studying that. I think it's fascinating.
I mean, yeah, to be fair, so I ended up doing my dissertation on dyslexia because I also have dyslexia, and I was interested in the genetics of that because they can't seem to pin it down at all. But I think that it's because they're going about it the wrong way, which was the foundation of my entire dissertation. So I do, I have other reasons to be subconsciously into genetics, but yeah, never really thought about the sense of smell before, but it definitely is a very interesting genetic situation now that I wish I should do more about.
Yeah. So you and I connected both on social media and because we're both involved with the patient organization Fifth Sense in the UK as one of their ambassadors. So kind of sharing information about ourselves and sharing information about Fifth Sense. So with that in mind, can you tell us a little bit about your social media presence? You have a page that you've started called Smell You Never. So why did you decide to start that page? And we'll kind of talk a little bit about that, and then we can chat about Fifth Sense.
Yeah, so I started Smell You Never on TikTok. So essentially, I opened a TikTok account just because I wanted to watch some videos. And then I thought, oh, you know, I'd quite like to make something, but what should I talk about? And I thought about all these different things I could talk about. And then in the end, I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to talk about not having a sense of smell, because as I said before, I thought I was the only one because I was the only, everyone who I ever spoke to about anosmia, no one had ever heard of it. No one knew anyone else except me. So I was like, oh, this is quite unique. You know, I might be the only one, which I know sounds really stupid, but I was like, oh, you know, it's quite unique. People might like to hear about it because it's quite unique. So I decided to just make some videos about things I didn't realize smell, and just talk about the fact that I didn't know they smell and people had told me that they did. And I was just kind of asking TikTok for just kind of confirmation that this was true. And that's just how it started. I was just looking for any answer. And one of my videos kind of went somewhat viral, not viral, but, you know, more popular. It was a video about cereal, of all things. The fact that apparently cereal has a smell, and I thought that was ridiculous because it's dry, and I still don't fully understand how it's possible, but so that got 45,000 views or something.
Oh wow.
Which was just insane. And I just carried on from there, because once I kind of had that video get that many views, I found all of these people who started saying, I have anosmia too, like, that's me, I'm the same. And I was like, oh my god, there's more of us. And then I carried on doing it just because I was so happy to have found that community, and I wanted other people to feel like I did when I found other people. Mm-hmm. You know, I like that feeling of, oh, I'm not alone, there's other people. And I had a call with some of the people who I met on TikTok, and they were all in America, so it was like 2 a.m. for me that I was having this phone call. And I was like, oh, it'll be fine, we'll only talk for like half an hour, so it won't be an issue, I'll just stay up and we'll have a chat. And we ended up talking for like 3 hours because we were all just so excited to finally find people who understood. And after that, I was like, oh, I really need to find a way for people to be able to like speak to me and reach out, because, you know, commenting is quite a public thing to do, and some people might want to have a more private way of communicating and having that support and that connection. And that's why I started the Instagram account, because on TikTok, if you're small like I am, you don't have the option to DM people unless I follow them back, and I didn't want to have to follow all like loads and loads of people, because I like to watch everything they've ever made before I follow them. Mm-hmm. Which I know is slightly ridiculous and very old school, but I just couldn't, that was unsustainable. So I decided I'd just start an Instagram, so then they could message me on there, and also then I could go live on there, because on TikTok you need at least 1,000 followers, whereas Instagram doesn't have that limit. So that's why I started the Instagram, purely just as a way for people to find, like, contact me and interact with me more.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've really enjoyed watching your videos. I'm not super familiar with TikTok myself, but I like the ones where there's like a background and then you have to like duck your head down. I just think that's so funny.
Yeah, so that's the green screen, and I use it quite a lot. Apparently, and I found this out recently, you can shrink you. Like, I'm now just used to just kind of pointing, so I just do that instead.
Interesting. Yeah, so we'll make sure that we include links to both of those pages for people. But kind of what you said out of all of that that stands out to me the most is the fact that you found people online and you didn't feel alone anymore. That's so powerful with social media these days.
Yeah, it just never had occurred to me to do anything about it, because it was never a big deal throughout my entire life. It never occurred to me that it was something that I should find people to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like, it was just a thing. Like, I'd Googled it. Like, I'd Googled, like, I don't have a sense of smell when I got to uni, because I was filling in all these medical forms, and just writing no sense of smell felt really, I don't know, unofficial. So I just Googled it to find out what the name was, and that was about it. And I did some testing at uni, and all they did was, you know, nasal sprays and sent me on my way, when they obviously didn't work.
Right.
So I just kind of left it at that. And then I was like, oh, okay, I have anosmia, that's fine. And it's only since kind of starting TikTok and finding other people that then I thought, oh, I'll look on Facebook. And then there's all these Facebook groups. And it's so nice to find people. And also, once I was kind of more involved in the community, I very quickly realized that the difference between congenital anosmics and acquired anosmics is quite significant.
Right.
In terms of just attitudes and kind of outlook to the situation. And understandably so. I mean, there is no kind of loss element to my anosmia at all, and I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I've always said that I would never have want to have lost it, but having never had it, I'm completely fine with that sort of thing. Like, it's so much worse to have lost it than to have never had it. Like, so
yeah, I agree with you. There's a big difference between people with congenital and acquired.
Yeah, and you can see it on the Facebook groups and on some of the Fifth Sense conversations that happen, that whenever you have a group of congenital anosmics, it's just such a positive and quite hilarious experience, because we're all just joking about all this stuff that we don't know anything about, whereas once kind of you interact with acquired anosmics, it becomes quite a somber experience because there's that loss element to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's so important that congenital anosmics get involved with the conversation, because we do have that kind of, it's okay, it can be, you can live happily, you can keep living and have a good life.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Kind of attitude, even though obviously we do hope that acquired anosmics can recover and there is chances of that. It's kind of like, but if there isn't, look, it is still possible to kind of have a good life, because look at us, we are living and we are happy, and that's kind of what. And also I work quite a lot with Debs to try and spread kind of happiness and like mindfulness exercises. I'm not very good at meditation.
This is Deb Davies, right?
Deb Davies. I'm not very good at meditation, but the kind of like focusing on what you can experience as a kind of way of, rather than focusing constantly on what you don't have, focus on what you do have, and not as a way of like giving up, but just as a way of kind of coping and remembering that everything isn't over.
Exactly. So you mentioned in there a few times, and I asked you about it a little bit before, but can you expand a little bit about how you got involved with Fifth Sense and what you do for them?
Yeah, so on TikTok they have quite a lot of days, so they'll have days where as a community we agree that only certain people will post. So they did kind of the Black Lives Matter Day, so only people of colour would post. And then there was a disability day coming up, and I was like, I'm on this, you know. Like, I got some other TikTok creators together and were like, we're going to join in with this, because in the community they had agreed that, you know, it wasn't just for physical disabilities, it wasn't just for XYZ, anyone who had a disability could post, you know.
Just to clarify, you're talking about like TikTok has certain days?
Yeah, TikTok. Yeah, okay, TikTok has certain days.
Got it.
So we decided we were gonna go for this and like, you know, try and actually spread the word about anosmia during this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to Fifth Sense because I found them, and I was like, do you have any kind of graphics or resources that I could use, or statistics that I could use to share on this day? And I spoke to Nina, and then all of a sudden it seemed like we were talking about ambassadors, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm just this, in my mind I was just this tiny little person on TikTok and just trying to build a tiny little community for ourselves there. And then all of a sudden I was being asked to be an ambassador for a charity, and it just kind of blew up. And yeah, that was just kind of it. And ever since, I've been trying to get more and more involved and really helping them out with as much stuff as I can. I've recently helped them make a video about tips for living with anosmia for their new website. I think it's also on their YouTube now as well. Mm-hmm. And I help them out with some of their live events. Particularly I'm very active when they do the virtual cafes. So whenever they happen, I kind of pop on and just kind of be there to lend my opinion.
Yeah, and one that you guys have done recently, I think you've done it a few times now, is they've hosted the congenital clubs on their talks, where you get together and those of you who have congenital anosmia talk to the Fifth Sense members. Is that right?
Yes. So essentially they realized that, I think partly because of dear Yaz and I talking about it a lot, that the congenital anosmics need their own space to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because often we kind of get overlooked and kind of not suppressed, but less kind of talked to and about when combined with other anosmics,
especially because, in light of COVID and all the people who've lost their sense of smell due to COVID.
Yeah, especially because of COVID, because the COVID anosmia like thing has been very, very helpful for research, and it has helped incredibly, but it's almost pushed congenital anosmia further down the list.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, any research on anosmia is useful, but it would be useful to know anything about congenital anosmia, because all of the research is always just done on acquired.
Right.
Almost to the exclusion of congenital anosmia. So it's just, and it's not just in research that it happens, it's kind of everywhere, anytime there's conversations, because we're quite happy and upbeat, we don't kind of need that support as much from,
right.
Like from these groups and from these events. So we just kind of let other people talk quite a lot and listen and try and be supportive of people who are in worse situations. But equally, we do have things that we want to talk about, and we do have things that affect us, and we do have questions.
Well, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is the differences between the causations, right? So people who've lost their sense of smell, it's that word loss, right? It's a huge loss. Something was there, now it's gone. A lot of people are going through the grief process. I think, and I can't speak for you, but I'm thinking, based on conversations with congenital people with anosmia, it's not a loss. So therefore, that whole grief conversation doesn't necessarily need to take place. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've never felt a loss at all. I felt left out. I felt kind of, a lot of congenital anosmics will say that they're envious. I'm not one of them, but I understand where that feeling comes from.
Got it. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah, you just kind of feel left out more than loss. Left out and confused.
I imagine, yeah, it would be weird to grow up when people are talking about this thing and you're like, what in the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, and no one knows that I'm anosmic necessarily, like,
yeah, it's invisible.
it never comes up. I'm very good at faking it, you know, and unless I feel like having a conversation, I just won't talk about it. I mentioned it when the anosmia day was happening. I talked about it with my cubs, because I'm a Cub Scout leader, and we decided to try and tell the cubs about it and get them involved, and, you know, get them to kind of be more mindful about the fact that they can smell and think about what they can smell. And that one of the cubs is my mum's goddaughter, and she turned around to me and she was like, that's not true, you can smell, we went to a barbecue and you said that it smelled good. And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I lied.
Right.
And having to try and explain to a child that you lied to them is quite difficult, but at the end of the day, it's like, I just didn't want to have the conversation.
Easier, it's a lot easier just to go along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another thing that you do online, you're all over social media. So one other thing that I want to touch on quickly is that you have started hosting some Clubhouse talks. So So first of all, some people who are not familiar may not know what we're talking about. So what is Clubhouse? And then secondly, if they're interested in learning more about these anosmia chats, how would they do that?
Yeah, so Clubhouse is an app. I think it's now available on Android as well, so it's much more inclusive. I think it's still invite only, so you have to know someone and then they have to add you. But essentially, it's a platform that's purely live audio. So you go on and there's all these rooms and you choose one that you want to listen to, and then you can just go in and you can just hear people talking. There's a stage with speakers on, and unless you're on the stage, you can't speak, you can only listen, but you can put your hand up and ask to come up on stage and have a and join in the conversation. There's certain etiquette rules about like muting and things like that, but essentially I was introduced to it by Debs, and she thought that it would be a really good place for for us to build an anosmic community, because it's another place where kind of live conversations can happen a little bit more informally.
Mm-hmm.
We had a little bit of issue at the start setting up a club, but we've got one now, so it's okay. So essentially what you need to do if you want to get involved with that is you just need to go to Clubhouse and follow our Anosmics Unite Club. There's a link to it in my Instagram bio to help you find it. But then any time that someone, one of the members, wants to have a live conversation, they can set up a room and you can all just kind of come and listen in on that conversation. You can listen in on the conversation and know about the room without following the club. It's just that's the best way to know when all of it is happening, because otherwise you have to follow all the individual speakers because there's not very good search mechanisms. But yeah.
Yeah, we did one for Anosmia Awareness Day back in February, and it was pretty phenomenal just to, again, be in a room with people who have the same condition all together. It was pretty cool just to be there and talk with each other and learn from each other. So yeah, I would recommend if people are interested in that as well, try to get invited. It sounds so like, I don't know, exclusive, yeah. But get invited to Clubhouse and
yeah, and some of us. Yeah, some of the people who are members of the club do have invites. So if you're looking, you can request it. But obviously, it's quite, we have to be careful who we invite, because we're then responsible for them on the app. So, but it is getting more and more likely that you're going to, it is getting closer and closer to being launched fully rather than just invites. So we're hoping that it's going to get bigger. But it is a really good environment, and we always make sure that anyone who would like to speak can speak. So if you ever want to be involved, you can just put your hand up and we'll invite you straight on stage. Yeah. Because otherwise it's generally just me, Debs and Abba just talking about whatever we feel like.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've tried to go to a few, but haven't been able to go recently. But the one that I did in February was really, really cool.
Yeah, we're struggling with the time at the moment. So once we kind of figure out a time to do it, they'll happen more regularly again. But also anyone who wants to, who is a member, can set up their own under the club. So it won't necessarily just be UK time zone appropriate.
Right. That's awesome.
Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I'm a big proponent of speaking about the importance of mental health, because living with a smell disorder can have a significant impact in your life. It can be an isolating and scary experience. I believe in the power of therapy, and that's why I recommend BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating within 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 15,000-plus counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log in to your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit betterhelp.com/thesmellpodcast, that's Better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for the Smell Podcast listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/thesmellpodcast. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast.
So kind of moving on to some other questions for you. Do you think that having anosmia impacts your relationship with food and eating in any way?
I didn't think it did. But the more I think about it, the more I think that it does. I realized I generally only buy and eat food that visually goes off, which sounds really weird. But like, so I stick to kind of bread and like pasta or things that have really long sell-by dates, so like a lot of tins and cans and kind of pasta and rice and things like that. And if I don't have that, then I just look at the sell-by date and throw it away, or just eat it before that date. Like whenever I go shopping, it's like a mad dash to eat all of the stuff that goes up, like that has a date on it. Yeah. And then I just kind of live on pasta and stuff for the rest of the time. My boyfriend now cooks, so that happens less. But when I was at uni, I literally just ate pesto pasta the entire time.
You know what's so frustrating? Yeah, you know what is so frustrating about that, though? Like the sell-by dates? When you do have a sense of smell, you're able to look at it as a guide, but then you're able to honestly like smell your food and say like, no, this is obviously fine, like I'm gonna continue to eat it. But I have, since also becoming an osmic like 11 years ago by now, I do go by those dates a lot more frequently, and if it looks fine but the date says that I shouldn't eat it, I typically won't eat it because I can't trust myself to know unless I can like ask someone else, like, can you smell this food, is it still good? So that is a real bummer about having anosmia, is I feel like we tend to waste more food that might still be potentially good because you just can't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't tend to waste that much food because I just don't buy it.
Gotcha.
That, so I think that's, it's almost like I'm stopping myself at a different level. Like instead of having the opportunity to eat that food, I'm just not kind of even going that far. I'm like, oh, okay, so that, you know, not even consciously, just kind of, I don't buy that sort of food because I don't like it. But if it's there, I eat it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't drink milk in my tea anymore.
Just because
milk just goes off. That's more, so that's from when I went to Costa Rica for a month. And when I was there, the milk went off after the sugar. And I was like, well, I'm not drinking that. So I just got very used to drinking black tea with sugar. But makes, I can't sense, taste though, the tea anyway, so it's just a better way of drinking my sugar water.
I drink English breakfast tea. I used to drink coffee. And now I just only have English breakfast tea.
So I can't deal with coffee. It's too bitter.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting when you don't have a sense of smell, the things that we gravitate towards.
Yeah, and that's kind of my main reason why I would never want a sense of smell. Like, I've developed all of my opinions on, like, everything based on not having a sense of smell. And the idea of all of that changing terrifies me.
Yeah.
Like, what if I don't like chocolate? Like, I'm not sure I can deal with that.
Yeah, well, kind of speaking of chocolate, if it doesn't have a lot of texture, to me it tastes waxy. I don't know for you if it's the same. So like, I gravitate towards chocolate that has textures in it, like nuts or fruit. There's actually, I don't remember who recommended this, I think it might be I'll have to think of the name, but she recommended Cadbury chocolate that has chocolate and fruit.
Oh, fruit and nut. Yeah,
it's so good.
See, I think it's a USA thing because US chocolate is gross. Oh. like as a rule, it's a thing in the UK that we just know that US chocolate is disgusting. I think it's because, like, I don't know what they do, but apparently it tastes a lot like vegan chocolate, or kind of apparently it tastes like dog chocolate as well, which I find hilarious. But yeah, I don't like stuff in my chocolate. I like just pure chocolate or hollow chocolate. But I think that's because the chocolate here is very different. It's very creamy and very milky and very sweet. Like, I don't like dark chocolate and I don't like white chocolate. I just like that middle ground. But that, I know that I don't like American chocolate.
Chocolate is different. But the Cadbury chocolate is British, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know if they remaster the recipe when they take it to the US.
Gotcha.
Because a lot of, like, so my dad worked for Coke for a while, and they change the recipe in every country to match the tastes.
Interesting.
So, like, in the US, there's far more bubbles. It's, so a lot of companies change their recipe slightly to match the tastes of that country.
I feel a little betrayed. It sells
better. Yeah. You'll have to come here and try some real British chocolate, and then you'll have to tell me if you still prefer the kind
the
of
difference.
The nutty stuff.
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit earlier, but when smell comes up in your day-to-day life, do you take the time to explain to people that you can't smell?
It really depends. It depends on the situation. It depends how I'm feeling. It depends who they are. If it's like a massive gathering and there's a lot going on, I just kind of go along with it and pretend because it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want to have the conversation.
Right. It's tiring.
Yeah. And also it's kind of changed recently as well. Like before I started kind of getting involved in the community online, I would never mention it. The first time I ever told anyone, like, properly was at secondary school, and I told my science teacher, and she kind of didn't believe me and forced, like, it was an experiment, a science experiment. I'm not sure how much you know about organic chemistry, but there's one transition in organic chemistry where the only difference is that one has a smell and it didn't before. And I was like, well, I can't do this one. And she was like, no, you can. And I was like, no, because I can't smell it. And she was like, oh, do you have a cold? That's fine. It will smell like this. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I've never been able to smell. I don't have a sense of smell. I cannot do this. I don't understand what you're talking about. Mm. And she was like, she just wasn't getting it. She was like, oh, no, it does. You just need to, like, just try harder. So I, like, do not do this. Disclaimer, like, this is the most dangerous thing you can do in science, so do not do this. But I grabbed the test tube, shoved my nose in it, and took this massive, like, deep breath through my nose, and I was like, there is nothing. And obviously she freaked out because that's incredibly dangerous. You don't just inhale chemicals.
Right.
Especially if you can't smell them and therefore don't know how much you've inhaled.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, you just, it's that kind of, I don't want to have this fight about the fact that it's real. I don't want to have this fight about the fact that it's a thing. I don't want to have to explain it.
Yeah, and it's hard because it's so tiring to not be believed.
Yeah. And it's kind of like people either assume, like, brush it off and kind of ignore it because they don't process it or they think it's a cold or something. Or they really hunker down and try and convince you that you're wrong.
Mm.
Or we get into the whole, well, that means you can't taste, which angers me a lot. Because right. I can taste, you don't know what I can do, like, and arguably I can taste better than you can, like, my sense of taste is better because that's all I have, you know.
True, yeah.
You wouldn't turn around to a blind person and say, oh, you're blind, that means you can't feel things, because it's like, well, no, their feeling is better, you know, is the compensation. And I get that once, when you have smell, there's this whole flavor element that, I mean, I've been told about, and it makes sense because people say that there's differences that, like, I have no idea about. So, you know.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense to me.
It makes sense that there's these things that happen because, like, I mean, I've never ever put vanilla in cakes because it never made a difference. And I was like, I'll just leave it out. It doesn't do anything. It's just something that people are adding for no reason because the recipe tells them to. And it's like, well, I'm not going to be a sheep. I'm not going to add it. And then I realise that actually people are adding it because it does do something. I just can't tell. So God knows how many years I've been feeding people, like, cakes that are kind of worse than they should be.
Interesting.
But so, I mean, more recently, I've been kind of trying to have that conversation. More so because I feel like it's a duty that I have. Because if people have that conversation with me, then they're not going to have it with someone who has that loss element attached to it and is probably more sensitive about it and less okay with the conversation.
It's interesting
because, like, I'm quite happy to argue with someone about it and to have that them talk to me about it, because it's not a bad thing about my life. Whereas I feel like if they then went into that, and then hopefully after that conversation, they'll have a better attitude to other people bringing it up in future. Whereas like, if they start with that attitude with someone who has lost their sense of smell, like that can be, that would be really hurtful and really harmful to them to have to go through that. So I'm just like, right. No, I'm just going to deal with this. You can talk to me about it. You can argue with me about the fact that I'm less, because I know I'm not, you know.
Right. Championing the cause.
Yeah. And I mean, I first started telling people kind of without prompting when I went to uni, because when I first went to uni, I realized that, you know, I was going to have to tell someone, because if there was an emergency, they would need to tell me. And like,
right.
I wanted them to smell my room when people were coming to visit. I was like, when my mum comes, I want to know that my room doesn't stink, so my mum doesn't think I've been living in squalor. So it was like, I opened my door when I first got to uni. I went across the hallway and I was like, hello, I'm Charlie. I don't have a sense of smell, so you're going to have to smell things for me. Like, I'm really sorry. You might just have to come over and just smell my room occasionally.
That's awesome, though. You're advocating for yourself, and that's really hard for some people to do.
Yeah, and it's the first time I'd done it, and actually it was really helpful. I only used it a couple of times, but it was really handy having that person to just kind of come around and confirm, like, okay, it was okay. Like, I'd done enough. You right. know, I wasn't kind of going to like kill people by them walking in the room or whatever, especially at uni when I was in dorms and they did inspections, and it's like if they came around and inspected it and it stunk, I wouldn't know, and mm-hmm. I could get like fined for the fact that my room smelled and I wasn't looking after it properly. It's like, but I don't know,
right?
And now I do try and say it more, and I do try and advocate for myself and others. But equally, I just can't be bothered sometimes. Like, and yeah. If it's a stranger, I won't mention it, because it's none of their business, really. And it's not worth the conversation, because it's just a quick kind of here and gone.
Oh, I understand. Yeah. I have to be very mindful about who you tell or not, because sometimes it can get into this full-blown conversation that you're not, like, mentally prepared for that day.
Yeah, and I've started more kind of hammering it home with the people who do know.
Mm-hmm.
So before, I would just kind of let it slide if they forgot, or kind of just give like they would always give me presents that are smell related, and it kind of breaks my heart when they do that, because, you know, kind of mentioning offhand, oh, smell this, is kind of like a reflex, and everyone does it. Like, I've shouted at deaf kids across a playground before, like screaming at them to stop doing something, and then as I'm shouting, I'm realizing they can't hear me, you know,
right?
Because it's just a reaction rather than a thought. But I like to think when you're buying a present for someone, you've had that thought process before,
right?
And the fact that they had a thought process, and even though they had a thought process, it never occurred to them that I can't smell and therefore can't do this. You know,
yeah.
And that this is an appropriate gift, that hurts. So I've been trying, and I think part of that is kind of my fault for not reminding them enough that I can't smell. So I've been really trying to hammer it home every opportunity I get. So like, anytime someone mentions, oh, that smells, instead of just kind of nodding or kind of staying quiet, I'll be like, well, I don't know. Like, I make a really snide comment just to kind of hammer home that they're talking about something that I don't know about, you know, not so that they stop, but just so that they remember as they're saying it, you know. Well, so yeah, that if I'm the only person there, like, they don't say it.
Well, it kind of reminds me again of like the differences in disabilities. So if we were friends with someone who was deaf, we wouldn't necessarily buy them a CD.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Like, you might on accident, because you really love that music and you want to share it with that person because you care about them. But I think that you would be more cognizant of the fact that no, I'm not going to buy them a CD or music that they cannot hear.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a little bit more like buying a blind person, like a book, like they can feel it, you know?
Yeah. Like, unless it's in Braille.
They can like feel the weight of it and they can like turn the pages, but they're not getting the main benefit of it.
Right.
So it's like, oh, thanks. You've bought me this. There's stuff I can do with it, but the whole point of it is missing.
Yeah.
The whole kind of core of this present is gone. Like,
that's a good analogy.
Yeah. And it's just really hurt. Like, that's the bit that hurts the most is when there's a gift involved. Like, I don't really care if it's an offhand comment. It's the gifts that kind of get me. And I just feel like no one's actually thought about me at all in this process. And they've just completely forgotten this key part of my whole person.
But yeah. So another question that we've talked about a little bit already, but I kind of want to go back to it, is, do you self-identify as having a disability?
I do, mainly because I don't have an issue with the word. I think a lot of people who don't agree that anosmia is a disability have an issue with the word disability more so than the fact that they have, that they are lacking in a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue, like the whole thing, is that a disability isn't something that's wrong with you. It's something that's wrong with society that makes you less, you know.
Mm.
And it's not that you are the problem, it's society is the problem. So if all, I think, I can't remember, I think it might have been Dia who mentioned this, like if all of a sudden the entire, like if all of a sudden some people started to be able to breathe underwater, it wouldn't, like not being able to breathe underwater wouldn't be an issue, you know, because nothing would be different. But then if they started building shopping centers underwater, they've made you disabled. Like the problem isn't with you, the problem is that society has now made it so that you can't function.
Interesting.
And I think that's the key part of the whole is it a disability argument. It's like, I mean, the definition of disability is a lack or a reduction in senses. I mean, there's only 5 senses and I haven't got one, you know. There's not that many to lose, and if you've lost one, that's a big loss. And it's not something that's kind of only activated occasionally. It's not like taste, where it's only an issue when it's on your tongue. Smell is one of the ones that's constantly on. It's a constant input in everyday life, if mm-hmm. you can smell. And if you don't have that input, you're down a third of your life. And again, it's the whole, as a congenital anosmic, I don't feel that loss. I don't feel that difference. I don't feel like I'm less than. I don't feel like I'm lacking. But if I argue that it's not a disability because I don't feel that, for all the people who need it, who have acquired anosmia, who have that loss, they're not going to be taken seriously, and they need to be taken seriously because they need to have that help to get to the point where I'm at, or to have that recovery, and they need to be taken seriously, and they're not going to be taken seriously if people don't know that it's a disability. So I'm not going to argue that it's not a disability because that's only hurting the community.
Right.
I mean,
that makes a lot of sense.
I understand that some people don't want to be considered disabled, but I mean, I have dyslexia, I have hypermobility, I have like issues with my back, like I have enough things wrong with me, like that count as disability. Like I'm okay with one more, and actually, it's so important for the rest of the community to have that support that, you know, I'm not gonna take that away from them just because I don't want this label that isn't really a negative. It just means that society has screwed you, you know.
Yeah. So leading from that, leading kind of into the next question is, if you had the opportunity to speak to people without anosmia, what do you want them to know about what it's like having anosmia? Like, what's the snippet that you would tell them?
Just believe us. It's difficult and lonely enough, let alone if you're going to start arguing with us about what we can and can't do and that it is or isn't real. Take it seriously. I've had a lot of people since I've said that I'm going to try and get a proper diagnosis saying, well, why bother? I even had someone tell me, why bother? Because it's not like they can do anything about it. And that angered me, because there's plenty of things that we diagnose that there's nothing we can do about, you know?
Yeah, like terminal cancer.
Yeah, it's like there's so many things that we diagnose that, you know, there's no cure and there's no treatment, you know? But that doesn't mean that we don't find out why. And I mean, you start squinting even the slightest bit and you immediately go to the opticians.
Right.
You, like, can't hear slightly and you immediately go to the doctor to get your ears tested. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to smell, yet the idea that I would try and find out why, like, I'm missing an entire sense, seems ridiculous. I mean, I went to the doctors for 13 years because I'm slightly shorter than average. 13 years, every year I went for a checkup to check that I was still growing. I'm 5'2". I'm not the shortest person in the world. I'm not even dangerously short. I'm slightly below average. And that's reasonable. You know, 13 years of going to the doctor every year for a checkup, that's okay. But finding out why I can't smell, that's absurd. Absolutely absurd. Why would anyone do that? You know, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, when you outline it that way, it's like, it's absurd that someone even thinks that's absurd.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, of course I would find out. Like, I might be missing a bit of my brain.
Right. Like, or what if there was something you could get fixed?
Oh, no. That's my worst nightmare.
Right? So, yeah, that kind of leads me into the next question is, I think I already know the answer, but if you could have a sense of smell, would you want it?
Only if I could turn it off.
Right.
I've been around deaf people quite a lot in life, just because through Cubs and things, we do quite a lot of work with the local deaf school. And because of that, I did some research on it. And the amount of trauma that is caused by cochlear implants is quite significant. As hearing people, we think that it's an obvious answer. And it's like, oh, it's a cure. Why wouldn't you take it?
Because it's overwhelming.
But it's overwhelming. If you watch videos of children just putting on hearing aids, they cry, they don't want them, they try and rip them off because it's so, like, there's just too much. There's too much information and they don't want it.
Well, it's too loud.
Too loud. Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine the same thing if you've never had a sense of smell, or even for myself right now, it's been 11 years.
Yeah.
I think it would be extremely overwhelming to smell again.
Yeah.
For my brain. I would be confused.
Yeah, it's not even like there's anything that you can turn off. Like, theoretically, with sound, you could go to a quiet space and close your, like, put your hands over your ears or wear noise-cancelling headphones. With sight, you could close your eyes. It's not perfect, but it reduces it. From what I understand, there's no way of reducing smell. It's always there.
Like, no, yeah, I think you would have to put in, like, nose plugs constantly. That would help. But even when you eat, sometimes you get like that retronasal olfaction. So you'll get like smell molecules going up into your brain based on eating your food, like through the back of your mouth. So I don't know that you could ever truly turn it off, to your point.
Yeah, it's not possible. Like, and it's the fact that I've gone through my entire life with two constant inputs. Like, you could argue touch is constant, but if you stay still, then, like, you can kind of zone it out. But, like, I've had hearing and sight. That's it. If I add smell, I'm increasing my level of constant input by 50%. So, like, that's a massive increase.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a massive, that's a lot of information that I now need to process.
Right.
Every day, every second of every day, like 50% more of everything every day. And I know I wouldn't be able to cope with that. Like, if someone said, oh, would you want to smell for like 5 minutes? I'd be like, yes. Like,
right.
That would be fun. I might be able to deal with that knowing that I could turn it off. And also, I think when we were taught, I was on one of the fifth sense calls, and there's one of the therapies they're working on at the moment is kind of like a cochlear implant for smell.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, but can you turn it off?
Right.
Like, if you can turn it off, give it to me. Like, absolutely. I'll turn it on, I'll turn it off. Like, I can get a break from it. But if you can't turn it off, you're not coming near me. Like, and if I went to the doctors and it turned out that I wasn't congenital anosmic and it's just that my sinuses had been blocked for all these years or something like that, which has happened before.
Right.
Like previously with other people, like it can be the fact that you think you're congenital, but it's like there is something to be fixed.
Like polyps or something.
Yeah, I don't know, but it could be something. I honestly think I would say no.
Right.
Because that is the sort of thing that then that's my new life.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as I said before, I don't want to like have to then reestablish what I like to eat. Like, I'm happy with what I like to eat. I don't
right.
like. What if all of a sudden I don't like chocolate? I think I'd, but yeah, it's not that worth
would be
it.
That would be a big bummer.
Yeah. And it kind of makes me feel a bit bad because I know, like, I know a lot of people would give anything to be able to smell again. And I would be there, like, rejecting that.
Yeah. But that's what makes sense for you. You know what I mean? Like, I understand what you're saying, but. I would love to be able to smell again. I think it would be overwhelming, but it would be really great for me. But that's because I've had it before. Mm. Not ever having it and then having the opportunity to get it. Some people would be willing to do that and some people are not. And I think both are okay.
Yeah. And I do think also it depends. I don't have children. And right. I've heard that once you have children and you're desperate for that kind of bond that apparently exists with smell, I can understand why that might change your perspective. So I'm willing for my opinions to change. But at the moment, it's a hard no from me. Don't
yeah.
give it to me.
Well, that is actually something that is true because my husband and I recently did have a baby in April. And since I don't have a sense of smell, I don't know what he smells like. And that's been tough. Being a new mom and having a baby is amazing. But there's certain accommodations, kind of going back to the disability conversation, where I'm not able to just smell his diaper and see
oh, yeah.
if he needs changing. Like, we have the diapers that have like the wetness indicator. So you can look at it and it gives you a clue like, oh, he's peed or pooped and he needs yeah. to be changed. But I have to physically look and see, oh, did he poop or is he just... did he pee a little bit and he's okay for a little bit longer? Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
there's definitely yeah. some things there for parents.
Yeah. I mean, like the whole idea of having children with like when you have anosmia is terrifying. Like I would potentially like to have children someday, but
right.
the idea of like changing nappies and like I like changing nappies, it doesn't bother me because I can't smell it, but
right.
like knowing when to do it
uh-huh.
and knowing if they smell, like I would quite happily be wandering around with a really stinky baby, like
yep,
and everyone's looking at me like I'm a terrible mother, but
yeah,
but
I'm hyper conscious of that. Yeah, as a new parent, he's about 2 months old now. I'm very hyper aware of checking him, and he's probably like, what are you doing? Why do you keep
yeah.
checking me so much? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think this is another reason why I'm so passionate about it being recognized as a disability, because the more recognition we get for it being a disability, the more likely we are to have research done and products made to support, like, and also, like, there's this whole thing about potentially working out a training program for dogs, like the idea of having a, like, a smelling nose dog is amazing, like, sounds amazing, and I really want it, but I honestly don't think we need, like, an officially trained one. Like, it doesn't need a little vest, it doesn't need to be able to go anywhere, but the idea of having a home training program, so, like, you could just kind of help your dog learn some key things to kind of help keep you safe and to stop your baby smelling, like, you know, the same way as you train it to sit, you know, you just kind of have a home training program. I think that would be really helpful, and the only way we can do that is by getting recognition, and the only way that you get effective recognition is by recognizing it as a disability, because people don't really care about stuff that isn't kind of recognized as a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. So my last question for you is kind of to wrap up. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with listeners?
Have a designated nose. Honestly, that's kind of the biggest transformation I've had. Growing up, I didn't ask anyone to smell anything for me at all, ever. Not me, not my clothes, not my food. I just kind of made do. And when I was told something smelled, I adjust, like, I mentally calculated what I could do differently in future. But I never asked people to smell things, like, off my own back, or, like, got or asked someone to smell things for me as a default before I put them on or before the mistake was made. And then since I've moved in with my boyfriend, I do it all the time. I'm still learning and still trying to think about doing it more. But, you know, just having that reassurance that he will not let me leave the house if I smell, you know, he will not let me, like, he will come up to me sometimes and be like, you need a shower, you need another shower today. I'll be like, fine, on it, doing it.
Right.
You know, and he always tells me in such a nice and kind way, like, he'll be like, oh, I think you need another shower. And I'll be like, oh, and I'm like panicking. I'm like, I need to go do that now. And he's like, no, it's fine. Like, it can wait. Like, I'm just letting you know, like, tonight, make sure you do it. And I'm like, oh, cool. And it's that kind of reassurance that he won't let me do something that's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, like, it's important to have someone like that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, like, having someone have your back like that is so, like, I'm so relaxed now about everything.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I need to panic, because I know everything in that fridge is okay. Because especially after I had food poisoning recently, he is now hypervigilant and will smell everything just in case I might eat something, you know, like,
that's in there. it's important to have that kind of support.
Yeah, and I tried, like, I lived 24 years without a designated nose,
right?
And the year I've had a designated nose has been so much better. Like, it's worth it, even if it's difficult at the start to have that conversation and to get into the groove of that. Mm-hmm. It's worth it.
Yeah. Well, props to him for being so supportive.
I think it's kind of to protect himself as well.
Doesn't want to eat anything that you've cooked.
He doesn't want to have to deal with me when I'm ill.
Right. Exactly. So how can listeners connect with you on social media?
Yeah, so I'm predominantly on TikTok. I post all of my videos there, and I interact far more on there. However, if people want to message me and have a, like, rather than publicly commenting, then I am on Instagram. So you can do that there, and that's also where I do lives and things like that at the moment. But I'm predominantly on TikTok, and that's where all of my videos are posted. Instagram just gets the highlights.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and speaking with me, Charlie. It's been great to talk with you, and I look forward to us continuing to interact with each other on social media for the Anosmia community.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you so much for your amazing podcast. I will catch up at some point. I'm working on it.
There's a lot of them, so it's okay.
Thank you to Charlie for joining me on the podcast today and sharing her story. Please make sure that you check out the links in the episode notes to find her on TikTok and Instagram. I'll also include a link to the Fifth Sense website as well, since Charlie and I are both ambassadors for them. The Smell and Taste Association of North America, or STANA, is the first patient organization focused on smell and taste disorders in the USA. To find out more, visit STANA's website online at www.thestana.org. We've raised enough initial funds to start the process of establishing as a 501c3 organization, so thank you to everyone who has donated so far. We are still raising funds to help pay for startup costs, so if you'd like to help, you will find the fundraising website online via GoFundMe. Link to donate will be in the episode notes. For any questions, or if you'd like to get involved, please visit the website or email us directly at info@thestana.org. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the Smell podcast if you listen using iTunes. Reviews are helpful because they allow others to find the show. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, you can do so by clicking on the link in the episode description, and I truly appreciate your support. A huge shout out to everyone who currently contributes monthly to the show, because your generosity is what makes this podcast possible. Until next time, I hope you all have a great day.